Baseball spring training is in full swing, one of my favorite times of year. And in this week's Full Flashback, we revisit our interview with baseball owner and marketing maven, Mike Vec. Mike Vec is president and part owner of six minor league baseball teams. He's the son of the legendary Hall of Fame baseball owner and marketer, Bill Vec, a man whose many promotions included signing a midget to bat for one game. Mike Vec has a reputation for his own innovative promotions, including Enron Night and Lawyer Appreciation Day. His new book is Fun is Good. He joins us from ARP Studios in Charleston, South Carolina. Mike Vec, welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure.
Mike, let's talk about your book. The title is Fun is Good. We're a business show. We know fun is fun, but why is fun good in a business sense?
Well, I think that we've all had the misfortune to work at one time or another for a wonderful business that's only downfall was that it wasn't fun to be there. You know, whether it's a baseball team or a radio station or a funeral home or you make copies there, the fact is that people work harder, they're more creative, they're more relaxed, they work unbelievable hours if you're giving them something that feeds their soul. And I think the first thing is laughter and fun. I think they need that desperately to function to the level that every once in a while we all can.
In the book, you cite a scene from the baseball movie Field of Dreams, a scene where James Earl Jones is explaining to Kevin Costner why people would come to an Iowa cornfield to watch baseball. James Earl Jones said, and I quote, "People will come for its money they have and peace they lack," end quote.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me always about how that movie connects, especially with people who aren't ball fans, and it is the fact that we can't buy the things that we most cherish. Nobody ever on their deathbed said, "I could have done one more deal." But they probably thought, you know, "I could have had one more laugh. I could have told David one more time how important he was, or I could have mentioned to Mike that I love him." And without being blecky at all, it's a world that is hurtling towards numbers. I mean, everything is figured out to a tenth of a decimal point, and we have such accuracy and human emotion in this is being lost. So that if you concentrate on developing your people, the money will take care of itself. And I ought to know, I've bought some of the worst ball clubs in the history of the world, and they all follow the same pattern. Find good people, treat people well, they'll go out and spread the word, and soon your coffers will fill up.
Hmm. And let's talk a little bit about your background, Mike. Many people would consider your father, the late Bill Vec, to be the ultimate...
He ain't late. He ain't going to make it today. There's a dead joke you can use. And why do they always say somebody's late?
And
they're not going to make it.
You're absolutely right. Darn it. I'm going to fire the radio producer that wrote that line for me, and I'm going to go off book for this one, Mike. You know, and by the way, and I loved your dad, Bill Vec, when I knew him. Of course, I never met him. You had the great benefit of growing up in his household. What was it like?
It was joyous. When there's joy, when there's happiness, when there's laughter, there's great creativity because one feeds on another. And it was like being the son of Geppetto, you know, the toy maker in Pinocchio. Mm-hmm. You just kept looking at him and thinking, gosh, you know, today in 1951, as you mentioned, the midget Eddie Goodell, 3'7", comes in the second game of a doubleheader between the St. Louis Browns and the Detroit Tigers, and history's made. And then he built an exploding scoreboard in the center field bleachers at Comiskey Park. He had Harry Carey singing "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" long before the North Side Cubs claimed it with the White Sox. And I used to look at him and think, where did all this come from? And the fact is that he was an expert on people. And it came from the fans. And I realized that what Bill Vec represented was this very intellectual, refined approach to research. He just asked people. He made mental notes. He constantly was looking to make it more fun, involve them, and always with a little twist that made it humorous. So that all through the book, all through Fun is Good, I think what you see are reflections of what growing up with my dad was like for me.
Mm. You also write that your family had fire drills when you were a kid, and you were in charge of getting the idea box safely out of the house. Do tell.
Well, you know, I don't know what people have in their lives or their homes that are very important to them. But because we had 9 kids and it was a large family, we lived on Eastern Shore, Maryland, in this very kind of ramshackle almost old farmhouse. We lived on the third floor, we being the boys, and so we would come down in this fire drill, and I would pick up a wooden box, and in there were index cards with every idea for every promotion that Mom and Dad had ever thought of. We didn't grab money, you know, David. We didn't grab things. We grabbed a wooden box full of note cards that would be worth all of $1.38 today with inflation. But on there were ideas. And so when you're a 7-year-old kid, when you're an 8-year-old kid, it's by osmosis you realize that, gosh, money isn't very important, but ideas, they are sacrosanct. And that was a wonderful, I think, example of the import that my parents placed on thinking and creative thinking.
Mike, let's talk about your career. July 12th, 1979 was a turning point in your professional life. The promotion was Disco Demolition Night, the setting Comiskey Park in Chicago, home of the Major League Chicago White Sox at the time. For listeners who don't know that story, can you paint the picture?
Yeah, it was a twi-night doubleheader rescheduled. The White Sox were again playing the Detroit. Everything happens in our family against the Detroit Tigers. And a twi-night doubleheader, which doesn't exist, of course, today, begins at 5 o'clock. Dad said to me, we got to draw some people. It was a Thursday night. There was a disc jockey by the name of Steve Dahl who blew up a disco record one morning on a local Chicago radio station. I called him up at 10:05 as soon as he was off the air, and I said, would you like to do that in person? And he said, I don't know if anybody will come. I said, well, take it out to Indiana and try it a little bit and let me know. So they ran it at a couple of shopping centers. We tried it on Thursday night, July 12th. The idea was bring a disco record and you get in for 98 cents. And I figured we'd draw 35,000 people. And that was a darn good crowd for that particular matchup. And the fact is, 100,000 people showed up. We had 60,000 people in the old Comiskey Park, 40,000 people outside. Between games, we put a stick of dynamite in a dumpster with 12,000 Donna Summers records, Casey and the Sunshine Band, and the Bee Gees and the like, and blew them sky high. Everything was wonderful until about 5 minutes after that explosion. I saw a kid come down the foul pole in right field, and suddenly there were 10,000 people on the field. We forfeited the second game, only the fourth forfeiture in the history of baseball. And I went from being a wizard to learning that you can't control everything. I lost every bit of the control freak in me sitting at second base watching 10,000 people and going, we just forfeited the second game. I'm in real trouble.
And what happened to your career at that point, and what has happened since?
Well, that was, shall we say, that was a great turning point. I left the ball club in September of the following year.
Okay.
And I could not get a job. Applied, wrote letters to all major league teams, minor league teams that I admired. And for 10 years, I didn't work. I went into the advertising business. It was very, very difficult for me, a huge blow. It taught me a great deal about egocentricity, which I suffered from tremendously. And but when you don't get a job in your chosen field for 10 years, it teaches you any number of lessons until 1989, November, when Marv Goldklang and Van Schly and Bill Murray called me and hired me to run the then Miami Miracle, mm-hmm. which are now the Fort Myers Miracle. And we haven't looked back. 15 years later, I've worked for 2 or 3 more major league teams, even though they said, you'll never work in this town again, kid. I've been fired by 4 or 5 major league teams since then. And we've had a wonderful time, made a living really dealing in laughter and owning these little broken-down clubs that nobody in their right mind would want.
You've certainly made a name for yourself, whether it was Disco Demolition Night, which I probably gets talked about too much, and some wonderful other promotions which aren't talked about enough. And I want to ask you about a few of those promotions or attempted promotions and hear how they did. You ready?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, we're looking down your resume here. Mike, how about Enron Night? Can you tell us what it was and whether it worked?
Yeah, Enron Night was a wonderful social commentary. We put shredders at the gates. We sold face value $5 tickets for $10. And my favorite gag of the evening was at the end of the night in a stadium that sat 19,000, we announced 192,000 attendance. We changed that the next day. Oh, no, we had 75,000. You know, we just kept milking it and milking it. We got hundreds and hundreds of emails from people saying, you can't do this. This is a terrible thing. People lost their jobs. And that was the point. We were trying to make light of what was a very serious situation. These people at Enron obviously perpetrated this tremendous fraud on people and hurt a lot of people. And the only way to draw people's attention, I think, is to approach it in humorous fashion. It was probably a mistake since Enron was the parent company of PGE Park, where the Beavers played. and I think they're still in court with that.
Bottom line for that one, was that a thumbs up or thumbs down looking back?
I give that a thumbs up.
Okay, next one for you, Mike. Vasectomy night. What was it? How did it do for you?
Well, we did that in Charleston. We announced a couple of weeks before Father's Day that we were giving away a vasectomy. We announced it very quietly, simply sent a release out, and planned on having just a sign-up sheet at the ballpark. As soon as it hit the news wire, shall we say, we had a lot of resistance to it. We announced it at 2 o'clock, as I recall. At 2:20, the Archdiocese in Charleston canceled their tickets. At 2:40, the mayor called, and at 3 o'clock, Mike Moore had been contacted by then interim commissioner Bud Selig saying, what are those idiots doing? And we canceled it at 3:20, but not before it had been, you know, it had crossed the country. My favorite headline was in Anchorage, Alaska. It simply said promotion snipped. That one, don't give away a vasectomy. Don't give it away on Father's Day. My mother had the funniest line. Guy called her, said, what do you think? She said, have you met my son? And that pretty much put an end to it. I give that one a thumbs down. Get an asbestos suit before you do that one.
Now, be square with us here, Mike. Are you going in thinking all these will work? Or with something like that, do you go in saying, you know what? We're promoting here. We're going to make a splash. It may not even happen, but a lot of people are going to be talking about our ball club and what we're doing.
Yeah, I always go in very optimistically. If I think it's going to get terribly bad press, I don't do it. I try never to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes. We did Voodoo Night, which I thought was very funny. It was Friday the 13th. That made it funnier. We did it on Good Friday. I'm Catholic. I meant no harm. Terrible idea. I'd never do it again. But I just misled myself. I get optimistic. You know, I think, hey, that's a great idea, and pay for it later.
Next one for you, Mike. Setting the record for the smallest attendance at a professional baseball game. What was it? Did it work?
Oh, boy. The record heretofore, they tell me, was one person, one mother in Portland with the Beavers in the 30s. One had attended a minor league game. And Jim Lucas, who was then our assistant general manager and VP, said, you know, we ought to go for a record of zero. I looked at him. I was going to rip his head off. I'm like, you know, we work very hard to draw people. Imagine you did a radio show and nobody listened. I mean, it's scary. So sure enough, we decided that we were going to go with this. And the Monday prior to the All-Star game, the Major League All-Star break, we didn't open the park. We actually padlocked it. We had cherry pickers. We drilled holes in the fences, and we made it a legal game. It went five innings before we opened the gates. There were 2,000 people outside, and they loved it. We did 200 and some interviews all over the world on Nobody Night because we had sealed our gates and let nobody in. And that has to be probably in my top 10. ESPN picked it as one of their top 10 promotions of all time. That one worked beyond any of our wildest dreams. Mm.
Last one I'll ask you about. In your book, you say, and I quote, one of the outlandish ideas I'm most proud of is what you say of this one, end quote. Mime-O-Vision. What was it and did it work?
Instant replay. You sit around, and it's getting worse in baseball, but you watch a football game nine times. After you look at the reverse angle, you look from downfield, you get the overhead, you see the same play 9 times. So I thought it'd be fun to make fun of instant replay, hire mimes. So I hired 5 mimes, and in the 3rd inning in St. Paul, we had a close play at first base. Bing, bing. Beautiful. The mimes jump up on top of the dugout, and they recreate the close play. Mimovision, replacing instant replay. I'm a wizard. Except 6,329 people sat there in absolute stupor. They couldn't believe anything this stupid. Nobody responded. I'm thinking, boy, this bit is really tanking. This is, and all of a sudden, a kid in the front row throws a hot dog at one of the mimes. And before you know it, I had the biggest food fight on my hands since Animal House. We sold 24,000 hot dogs to a crowd of 6,000. And in the 7th inning, the mimes are hunkered down. In the 8th inning, they said things that mimes shouldn't say.
Are there hot dogs all over the field, or what's happening?
There were hot dogs flying everywhere. I mean, it was unbelievable. And my favorite part of the story is the next day, in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, there's a 4-color picture of a mime taken in chops from some little kid. So you get a 90-inch story about how stupid the promotion was, on top of the fact that you sold all these hot dogs. They were throwing hot dogs before they were dressed. And I... The following year, we were going to follow up with a gang night. We were going to have a mime as a terrible thing to waste, but the mimes backed out at the last minute. They decided they weren't going to come in and do it.
Mike Vec is the author of Fun is Good. Mike, good luck with your book. Good luck this season. And thanks for joining us again on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you so much, David.